Welcome to Bonding Time, the regular podcast hosted by the Bond Dealers of America and featuring bond market leadership from the sell side to buy side, regulators, politicians and policymakers, technology providers, and many more. Today, we're happy to talk with Ken Hoffman, president of DPC Data, a longtime BDA member firm, and a leader in terms of municipal market data, products, and services. Thanks for joining Bonding Time, and now let me welcome Ken Hoffman of DPC Data. Ken Hoffman, DPC Data, thank you very much for joining us. This is the BDA's podcast, Bonding Time, and thank you for a couple of things. One is being a longtime BDA member firm, being very active in the BDA, but also taking time to do this, to also submit an article for Fixed Income Insights, which we are releasing, knock on wood, today after lots of editing. But thank you very much to you and team for doing that. I thought to start with, we could talk about, you know, the firm. You know, looking at, you know, the website is really easy. Your website's really easy to navigate. One thing that struck me about the website is the history. And so, you know, date back to at least, you know, in 1997, you know, when DPC Data was, you know, was appointed as a nationally recognized Muni Securities Information Repository, or a NRMSR, by the SEC back in 1997. And since then, you've launched, you know, Muni Points, Muni Docs, and Muni Guard Pro, Muni Guard News, a filing summary, which was related, I believe, to MCDC back in 2015, right. Muni Trade View in 2017, and then more products and services since then, which we'll talk about the mapping tool as well. But I wondered if you could talk a little bit about DPC Data, the firm, the history of the firm, and kind of where, you know, you are today.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mike. Thanks for inviting me to the podcast. It's very exciting. I think it's great for the BDA to take on this this new role or new initiative here to do podcasts and be very informative. I think it will be great, and I appreciate it. And very happy to contribute to the to the e-magazine that you're producing, and looking forward to that as well. So, DPC Data, yeah, we have a long history. We were founded in 1992, so we've been serving the municipal market for over 28 years now, and that's which is incredible. We have a lot of great loyal customers and give us a lot of inspiration, I guess, to continue on and do different things. As you mentioned, well, actually, before we were a NRMSR in the early 90s, I guess we were seen as a pioneer at the time in consolidation and digitization, categorization, and of course, dissemination of official statements, material events, continuing disclosure documents, because we had put all those originally, it was on CD-ROM, and, you know, I probably have told this at a BDA conference, but when I first started in the industry, I worked for a company, J.J. Kenney, which is owned by Standard & Poor's, and I guess now that division is with ICE, but we used to have a huge library on the 16th floor and 65 Broadway down in Lower Manhattan, and it was a reinforced, you know, steel floor with all kinds of official statements and continuing disclosure documents. And when DPC Data came along, I remember using, you know, all that slowly went away, and we were using CD-ROMs to access all this content. So it saved a lot of space for sure in the industry, and, you know, it was much easier to circulate documentation. And DPC Data was, you know, was all a part of that. And I think, you know, we often say over here, we were Emma before there was an Emma, right? And that led to, you know, the NRMSR status back in 97. So, but along our history, we launched and maintained, you mentioned, a lot of products that we have, and we've done that through, what we like to say, client-centric solutions. And we have over 70 clients. Many of them are BDA members, proud to say. And, you know, while we have primarily served broker-dealers and underwriters with meeting disclosure requirements and due diligence obligations and other regulations, you know, we also get involved in many ad hoc data projects for whoever it might be, compliance professionals, portfolio managers, law firms, and even universities contact us for historical data. And we have great partnerships too with the retail trading platforms, and we even distribute data to, you know, several other information vendors. So we've done a great job cultivating relationships over the years. And like I mentioned, many of our customers are BDA members, and we're fortunate to have what I call ideal clients. You know, they come to us with problems or even ideas, and we're able to work with them to create meaningful solutions. And I think that's what makes us a little different in the industry, in that we're not interpreting guidelines or producing solutions looking for a problem. It's quite simply the other way around. You know, we have a great team. We keep our eyes on changes in the marketplace, but we're able to work with clients to come up with workflows around whatever it might be, disclosure, underwriter due diligence, best execution, and now obligor sector mapping. So, that's kind of like our ethos here is, not trying to jam any solutions down anyone. It's really to kind of work with the client to come up with those things. And we've been doing that, ever since. And I don't know if I could go through some of the products, but you mentioned some names, but maybe.
Well, I'm wondering also the client base for TPC Data. Is it principally regional middle market firms that aren't building these tools internally? Or is it everybody, including, bulge bracket firms?
We have both, actually. Regional firms are definitely a big part of it. And, our products, specifically for the broker-dealer market, where we have products that satisfy time of trade disclosure, which is the Muni Points product that you mentioned before. And a lot of that is, embedded within trading platforms. So it's a nice linkage there. So at the time of trade or a financial advisor is doing maybe some research on a bond, they're able to kind of get a good sense of the issuer with our Muni Points product, because that is a cliff note of the official statement or a summary of the official statement. So it not only satisfies time of trade disclosure, where you have to tell the investor, this is what I know about the bond, these are the material events and continuing disclosure items, but it also helps advisors and sometimes traders to sell the bond to an investor. So yeah, a lot of regional players use that tool through their existing trading platform. But then on the larger bulge bracket or wirehouse type firms, we offer data feeds and API solutions in some cases where they already have a proprietary system, so they embed our tools, our data, links to documentation within their proprietary system. So it's a mixture of both.
Right, right. So I mentioned the mapping tool. So let's talk specifically about that. There was good coverage of that back in late September. In the bond buyer, in a nutshell, I think it's basically providing a tool to map directly to the underlying obligor of muni debt, right? Who's paying the debt service?
Yep.
But I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, go. I would love to. It's interesting. The development of this tool was originally an internal necessity for us, right? But we soon found out that it can play an important role for our clients as well. And over the years, because of our large document library, we had received requests from market participants for financial documents, budgets, annual financials, CAFRs. And we completed some projects. We were able to use our analytical team to extract some of the financial data contained within these documents. And in meeting with clients to discuss their financial data needs, we decided to move forward on a broader project to collect a more comprehensive set of financial data. So moving away from these little ad hoc data projects and to say, really put a stake in the ground and said, we're going to be the premier provider of municipal financial data. And in doing so, so we haven't really announced that yet, but that I'm sure I'd be happy to do a podcast on that next year. Mm-hmm. But, in doing so, we had to address some of the current shortcomings of this type of data in the marketplace today. And that really came down to defining multiple, and by multiple, I mean, a lot, over 100 templates that are going to be used to extract this financial data on a relevant sector of a given obligor. So see, if we started collecting massive amounts of financial data across issuers, and we shoehorn data into only a few templates, users would lose the ability to do effective comparisons or efficient analysis. And, that gets us back to the shortcomings, right? So we learned that the best way to compare an issuer's revenues with another issuer currently is to hope that they present revenues in the same way. But if we applied a consistent, sector-specific template to the collection of data, comparison would be based on similar revenue streams and be much easier. So we had to do something different. And in building all of these templates, we developed a brand new obligor sector mapping methodology. And that is effectively identifies the true obligor, as you mentioned, of a bond issue. And, we took this identification and we mapped each obligor to a specific sector or subsector. And it's really been great because the sector designation is, it's not only simply based off of the bond's purpose or use of proceeds, which a lot of times, you know, happens today in the marketplace. The direct obligor in our case is driving the sector mapping. And by the way, we also have all those obligors tied to not only the sectors, but all the relevant CUSIP nines, right? So this was, you know, very labor intensive. And even though we did have a very comprehensive obligor and CUSIP linked database, and we had that from the very beginning, our team, you know, of credit research analysts, you know, we worked on this for almost a year. And, you know, although I think a lot of people would ask, well, why wouldn't you just use technology, you know, to, you know, identify use of proceeds and, you know, a sector and kind of like automatically just map them together, you know, that wouldn't have given us the specificity and the accuracy we needed. So we had to use our human capital, our research analyst team to, you know, open up, you know, take a look at all these obligors, all these bond issues, determine the direct obligor and attach a sector to it. So I mentioned earlier, it was an internal necessity for us, but a somewhat surprising thing happened on the way to developing the financial data solution, you know, meeting with clients and telling them about all these sector specific templates that we were going to use to collect financial data. You know, the clients were like, wait, back up. How did you identify these sectors? And our conversation shifted from, oh, okay, you're going to have comprehensive financial data, to, wait a minute, we want to hear about the, you know, the obligor sectors. How'd you do this? So, you know, we took them through our methodology, showed them examples of capital structures, you know, the direct obligor concept and how it links to different funds and revenue pledges, et cetera. And the response we received was, you know, in some cases, it was kind of funny. They were like, yep, that's how I would do it. You know, it looks good. And, you know, that's what you want to hear. And right. Then we heard was, you know, how do we get access to it? So a good question to ask, I guess, you know, was, well, what do you want to do with the sector mapping? You know, we're using it for internal reasons, but what do you want to do with it? And that's when you really, you know, learn a lot about what the clients, you know, use this data for, of course, because it wasn't one of these solutions, again, like I said before, looking for a problem. You know, we kind of stumbled upon the problem. So we found out that our mapping is done in a similar fashion by analysts like at client firms, you know, but it's very time consuming for them. It's kind of a bespoke nature. It's done for every issue, new and old. And you know, they can use it a variety of workflows as we learn, you know, portfolio analysis to gauge exposure. You know, they could build more relevant comparables. Liaison traders or these specialist traders, they use designations for model portfolio building, you know, especially when diversification is important. And, you know, certainly we found out that traders can also use this on, you know, for sector assignments as a basis for matching trading levels, right? So there was a lot that we learned, and we were happy to get this validation, you know, from clients, directly from clients. So we started building out something to help ourselves, and, you know, indirectly, we found out that it can help our clients as well. So we're real excited about this. And we've been getting a lot of good interest, and we're very happy that we can, you know, do something to help.
That's great. That's great. That's great. So I was kind of turn to some other issues, you know, on the website, yeah. Solutions for muni bond dealers. One of the many things that DBC Data, you know, does is, among other things, is work, you know, directly with muni bond dealers, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the benefits, some of the services for dealers ticked off are, you know, underwriter due diligence, point of sale disclosure, expanded discovery, ongoing surveillance, and seamless integration. And so my question is, where's the growth for DBC Data? You know, where's the growth that you hear from? So it's, you know, is it expanded discovery? Is it seamless integration? Is it all of it combined? Or is there one kind of area that you see in working with working with clients in 2020 and looking forward to 2021? You know, where's the need and where do you see the growth with the firm?
Definitely, we see it in this untapped, there seems to be an untapped, you know, need out there for filling the gap with financial data. So that's really our big, you know, push over the next year is, you know, you have market, you know, vendors out there that provide financial data. And this would be an integrated approach, right? So it would be, you know, plugging in financial data into clients' existing applications. And when I mentioned there's a gap out there, you know, there's providers that provide a certain set of maybe most actively traded deals and have the financials on there. Or through the rating agencies, you can get financial data, but it's typically only for the deals or the bond issues that they rate. And so there's a gap out there, and you know, our intent is really to fill that gap with financial data in an integrated way. So it would be delivered in data feeds or APIs to really fill in use cases where an analyst is at a member firm or a client firm is really spending most of their time collecting data when they should be analyzing an issue.
Right.
And for in terms of expansion in our existing products, one thing in terms of underwriter due diligence and the product that came out of, or the solution that came out of our MCDC initiative, we helped a lot of clients back then. And we did build a product called Filing Summary that really packages all of our data and linkages across an obligor to help them do their due diligence a lot quicker. It's kind of a solution that's ready out of the box and helps the analyst, the underwriter, I should say, save some time, from searching Emma and other places to find out if an issuer is, has been compliant. And an extension of that is something we've already done earlier this year, which is combining some elements of financial data collection with preliminary official statements, so that an underwriter, helps the underwriter kind of identify if there are any red flags in a new bond issue, before they bid on the issue. And we were able to kind of package that up and build a like a one pager where it has, summary of the POS. It's kind of like muni points, but only we're not using official statements, we're using POSs. And then we've pulled out or extracted, financial data from that POS. So it's all, available in a nice, easy to read, like typically one pager, maybe two pagers, so that the underwriter knows what's going on with property taxes, have debt ratios changed, have revenues declined or increased, and they need all this before they're able to bid on a bond. And
that seems, that sounds like that's, today that's more important than ever, right? With the pandemic and the hit to state and local governments, issuing any municipal bond issuer, the challenge that is provided just to provide more clarity to not only the underwriter, but also ultimately the investor.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. I think we should do a separate conversation solely on that issue and that product. It sounds like a lot to talk about there, because I think that's going to be an issue that carries forward into 2021.
Sure.
No reason to think it wouldn't. So let me ask you quickly about, COVID challenges. So I know, I would encourage people to go to the DPC Data website. The resources tab has just lots of articles and research pieces, webinar links, to different aspects of, the muni market generally, not just about DPC Data's work, but the muni market generally. But, one issue that we have to talk about a little bit is muni disclosure, during the time of COVID, mm-hmm. and hopefully it will be a post-COVID time sometime soon.
Right.
But how is, can you talk a little bit about the challenges that, as you see it, with regard to muni issuance, muni disclosure during this challenging, time for state and local governments?
I think the market is, I think many people say it's in wishful thinking mode, and municipalities are not only dealing with, COVID things related, operationally related, but there are still, issuers out there with the problems with their, fiscal structure, right? So that's compounding some things. And I don't know if we get a vaccine or not, if the markets will change. I'm the wrong person to ask about that.
And issuance has been great, right?
Yeah,
issuance has been every month after month has been strong.
Exactly, yeah.
And now the Fed's winding down their municipal liquidity facility, per directive from Treasury. Yeah. But it's the important part there, though, is the structure is in place at the Fed, right? So if there's a need to resurrect the muni liquidity facility for any reason, the structure is already there.
Absolutely.
Right? They've already jumped through those hoops, and that's the BDA's position, frankly, is that there's no need for it today, but we're glad that it's there and the structure is there so it could be reconstituted if need be. But it's interesting to talk to you and other people in the business about, you know, what you see for as we roll into 2021.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what the spring holds, but hopefully, like you mentioned, a vaccine, market stays strong. There's potentially more stimulus for state and local governments.
Yeah.
You know, as we kind of come out of this period.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, we've also seen, you know, very few credit events. And I think, you know, the marketplace bought some time with some PPP loans to keep the revenue streams going. And yeah, I mean, I guess that's the key. You know, if there's another, you know, shutdown or if another, you know, series of PPP loans are needed to keep, you know, keep revenue streams alive, you know, I guess we'll have to see. I'm not really sure. But, you know, they can only go so far. I guess the market has to deal with what's going to come and, you know, somehow. But I mean, in terms of, you know, disclosure, we keep stats on all of things that are coming through. And, you know, earlier in the summer or late spring, we did also, I know a couple of other providers, have, you know, including the MSRB, you know, posted COVID-related disclosures or documents. And, you know, we've been keeping track of that as well. We're probably not doing a great job of broadly disseminating our data, but we'll look to do that. You know, it's funny because when we're talking about, like, do we put COVID flags on our products or do we let clients know that this material event, you know, specifically mentions COVID? And it's like, well, how long, you know, this is like back in March. It's like, isn't this going away? It's going to go away soon, right?
Right, so why, right.
And it turns out it's, you know, approaching December and we're still doing it. But, you know, we track all this stuff. We open up every material event and continue disclosure. So we're not just taking the data from Emma and saying, you know, they have a list and so this is COVID related because, and I think we talked about this in other forms throughout the years that it's not always COVID related. They just might mention like, due to COVID, we don't see any delays in our annual financial filing. Well, that's not really like a COVID impact, you know.
Right.
So we look for the COVID impact things and, you know, from material events, we've seen COVID-related, you know, material events decline since April. And I think of all the inflows of material events that we've seen, you know, October, the latest stats we have, October, we saw about 2.6% of the inflow of material events had a COVID, you know, tag on it. And, you know, if you look at continuing disclosure docs, they have gone up actually. So issuers are putting specific statements about COVID in their annual financial filings or their, you know, the CAFRs or budgets. So we've seen that kind of rise and kind of peak actually in October. So there's definitely, you know, issuers are making sure to mention something about COVID in their disclosure. So
right. But we can't attribute everything to COVID, right? So it's per your point. All right. So I want to end things on more of a personal note, like we'll do with a lot of these podcasts. A lot of people have taken up new hobbies, et cetera, during the work from home phase, during COVID, and finding new ways to balance time, both family and work balance. Every time I've talked to you via Zoom, I see a guitar in the background. So you just have to tell me if you're are you in a band? Is it just a hobby? Is it a stress reliever? Can you play at all? Does it just sit there because you like the way it looks? Or tell me about the guitar real quick.
Yeah, I did bring it in around COVID, I think, because in our office we did send everyone home in middle of March. I continue to come to the office because there's literally no one else in the building. And since from like March until probably June, I didn't see like a single person in the building, not even like walking around. So I came here, it was a nice place to work. And I brought the guitar in to noodle around. It's definitely not a hobby, but more of I endeavor to play it. And it actually is like it's funny you mentioned that because it's like it's like a topic of conversation when I get on Zoom calls, right? With clients or with people in the office, they're like, yeah, I could play a couple of chords, but I'm not very good. Now, Tria Nguyen, who works for us, is a very, very good, accomplished guitar player. So Maybe I should get some lessons from him.
All right. Well, I'm thinking about future entertainment at BDA events. And so I think we've identified you and Triet in intermissions up on stage.
In my wildest dreams.
Playing some Bob Dylan, I suppose. But all right. Well, Ken Hoffman, president of DBC Data, thank you very, very much for this. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your engagement with BDA generally. And I know we're going to talk again about future products, but thanks again for taking time to be on Bonding Time.
That's great, Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. And I wish everyone happy holidays to all the members and everyone out there listening.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you very much. And we'll talk soon. Thanks. Bye.